everybody, and welcome to Shift F1, a podcast about speedy race cars. I am Drew Scanlon.
And I'm your new host, Johnny Felipe Massa.
Oh, that's what he's doing.
Yeah,
oh.
I decided to finally retire and take up my, God, the accent couldn't be worse, take up my one true love of talking to the press.
You both have green in your flags.
That's true. We both have... No, that's it. That's the only thing. Yeah. No, hi. I'm Danny. We're back.
We're back.
We're actually recording in the same place as well. This is really weird.
Yeah. Looking at each other, deep into each other's eyes. It's Cloth Map HQ.
Apparently, yeah.
AKA my living room.
Noclip and Cloth Map have done so well that we're going to fund me flying into across the country every week.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just like F1.
You have to fly.
Load all your stuff onto trucks. Container ships,
yeah,
airplanes,
a life on the road.
That's right.
Yeah,
we're living it.
We're back,
and welcome to the preseason primer episode for 2018. We're cutting it close.
We are.
The race is this Sunday, so we are. The aim of this episode is to get not only everyone who is a past, you know, listener of Shift F1 up to speed on the new season of 2018, but it's also the podcast that you give to your friends to say, hey, you've never heard of F1, just listen to this episode. It'll get you all caught up.
We got you.
So this one's for the noobs out there.
Totally. This podcast is for the noobs. It's always been for the noobs.
We are the noobs.
Yeah, exactly. So. We will continue to be the noobs. It's been, how many seasons is this? Is this our fifth?
Did
we start the minute I moved to San Francisco? That makes
pretty
sense.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess it would be, yeah.
That's nuts.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. This should be a good year. I mean, in terms of changes, this probably has more changes than the majority of the other seasons we've covered.
Yeah, I think if this is your first year in F1, welcome.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a good one.
No better time.
And there's no better time. we have a lot to get to. We'll keep it real. We'll, I guess, accessible, but we're trying not to skip anything.
Yeah.
Maybe not too many technical deep dives. And I imagine for a first timer, this is going to be a lot of information.
Yeah.
So like, don't worry about remembering all of it. I would say just, as you're watching, the commentators will say stuff and then you'll remember.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's DRS or whatever.
Yeah. This is like the, you know, like 20 minutes before the exam and you have that one sheet of paper that you just, everything on it is relevant, but you just keep reading it over and over again. So it sits in your like latent memory.
Yes.
And then, yeah, when you watch a race, somebody will say, we won't talk about editing that doesn't come up fairly often.
Right.
So just go asleep. Just like get into your first REM cycle, have this play in your ears, and you'll remember everything about Formula One.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's how it works. What do we got to cover? What are the topics?
I mean, let's just start with how many cars there are.
Might
be a good start.
Sure.
There are 10 teams.
Yes.
With two cars each. Teams are kind of a common thing among motorsports, but Formula One's really easy to recognize teammates because their cars are painted exactly the same color.
And then difficult to differentiate the cars because it's their helmets that are painted differently.
Yeah, the drivers. Yeah,
yeah.
Telling them apart. But we'll get to that. And all the drivers. And similar deal, we're going to run down everyone. And then you're going to remember, oh, that's the lovable Australian. That's
right.
The one they were talking about.
The only prerequisite of being a driver in F1 is that you have a weird name. So we'll get to that in a little while.
Yeah. There are 21 races this season.
Yes.
Held roughly every 2 weeks from March 25th to November 25th with a month-long break in there around August.
Yeah.
The races take place on Sundays with a qualifying period on Saturday and practice on Friday and a little bit on Saturday.
Yeah.
And qualifying is basically it's separate from the race. It takes place on a different day, like we said. And that determines the order that everybody starts the race in.
And fastest car at the front, slowest car at the back.
Exactly. And that sounds really boring because it's basically just time trials. But right. If you're a race nerd like us, qualifying can actually be really fun to watch.
Yeah. And the way it's the trickle down effect is that when you start this, you usually just watch the race. And then you're like, oh, no, actually, I should watch qualifying because it's so relevant. And then eventually you're watching practice one on like the Friday morning just because you want to see how good the cars are going to be and maybe get some insight into how well they'll qualify.
And then you start watching Formula 2.
Yeah. Formula E.
Formula
and all
E.
That. Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah. How you finish the race determines how many championship points you get. So at the end of every race, drivers are awarded championship points, and then at the end of the season, whoever has the most championship points is the driver's champion.
Yeah. So fast and consistent speed is probably the most important thing.
Yeah.
Getting up there. But the points trickle down pretty fast as well. So yeah.
You get 25 points for being in first place, and then all the way down to 10th place, you get one point.
Yeah.
And then 11th and below, nothing.
Nada. Yeah.
That 11th place really sucks.
Yeah, it does. Participation trophies are not very common in F1. That's why qualifying is so important as well.
Yeah. There is also a constructor's champion, which is when the driver gets points, the team also gets points. Mm. And whichever team at the end of the season has the most points is the constructor's champion.
Yeah.
It matters a lot to them, and they actually get a cash payout to the team based on that. But everyone really just cares about the driver's championship.
Yeah, and the constructor's championship is usually wrapped up a couple of weeks before the end of the season anyway. Because generally, one car on a team is within the same sort of speed, you know, pocket as their teammate.
Yeah.
The teammate might be faster, but like you never have a situation where one of the cars in a team is getting firsts and the other one's getting 12th. Right. They're usually within the same like two or three spaces of each other.
Yeah. Speaking of the teams, you will probably recognize a lot of the names here: Mercedes, Ferrari, Renault, McLaren. These are all, those teams specifically are companies that also make road cars.
Right.
And the whole, their ostensible goal for being in F1 is to use F1 as like their tip of the R&D spear.
Right.
Right. To like, this is where we optimize performance as much as possible that then will trickle down into our road cars, or in the case of Ferrari and McLaren, are like super sports cars.
Right. And lots of stuff that you have in cars right now over the past like five decades have trickled down from Formula One, everything from side impact bars to seatbelt technology, even like stuff like the crash bars, the front of the cars that like disperse the impact around the driver instead of sort of making sure that people walk away from really bad crashes, including a lot of the hybrid technology that you're seeing today. A lot of that is coming from tests that they're doing in F1, because F1 uses a lot of battery charging stuff.
I think a lot of people outside of F1 would be surprised to know that these are hybrid cars.
Right.
They have an internal combustion engine, and they also have a battery that not supercharges it. That's a different engine term, but it augments the engine or the power unit.
Mm.
So, and crazily, there are devices on the car that convert heat and kinetic energy into battery power. So they actually recharge during the race.
Yeah. In fact, it changes the way drivers drive. We'll get into that a little bit, but the way they take corners, the way they brake in a way to help charge that battery. And the battery then is used to effectively give them a boost.
Yeah.
It used to be literally a button you'd press, but now it's sort of more dispersed throughout the lap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That I kind of wish they would illuminate that a little more, because right now it's still kind of a black box. They're like, you know that it's a hybrid engine and they get this like extra power, but you don't really understand how.
Yeah,
at least I don't really understand.
Formula E does it a lot better.
Yes,
with the fan boost stuff and with like just the way in which the you can see the battery levels in the car and how much they push. But yeah, it's a little bit under the hood in F1. Like you don't really get to see that very much.
Interestingly, so there are, as we mentioned, Mercedes, Ferrari, and Renault, they all have their own teams, but they also make their own engines and sell those engines to other teams.
Right.
So, for example, Red Bull, which is a Formula One team, buys their engines from Renault.
Right.
It's a cost-saving measure for that team because they don't have to develop an entire engine to... Right. And in fact, in the case of Red Bull and Renault, Red Bull is actually a better team because they, like each team has, you know, various pluses and minuses, and Red Bull happens to be very good at aerodynamics.
Yeah.
So they use the Renault engine, but they're a faster team because they do car setups.
Right.
Better.
Yeah.
So that's, there's a lot of,
and the way they set up the engine as well can be a lot different to that. And obviously there's the drivers involved as well, but that's a good example actually of a team that's been consistently better than their engine supplier.
Yeah.
Yeah. For years.
And they, I mean, the, there are a lot of strict regulations about what you can do with your Formula One car. Mm. Like you have to have your wheels have to be exposed and that's certain. Your front wing must be a certain distance. There are like many, many details, but that doesn't mean all the cars are the same.
Right. No,
by any means. So it's really down to the engine and what the teams do with the car that makes one team better than another.
Yeah, and the other strange thing about F1 as well, in a way to sort of make it so that the richer teams aren't out researching the lower teams, is that they're very strict on how what type of research you're allowed to do. Like track days are very restricted to like specific days in like a calendar that the organizational body runs. Like you're allowed to, you know, fluid dynamics and aero stuff on like models on your computers, and you're allowed a certain amount of like aero days in wind tunnels and things like that. But actually, when it comes to like rubber hitting the road, most all the teams have essentially the same window of time to do that type of research in.
Which means that like someone with deep pockets like Mercedes or Ferrari can't just, you know, spend 1,000 days running Formula One cars on their own private track while tiny other little teams can't do that. Yeah. Right. So it's meant to like even the playing field.
Yeah. Which sucks for those teams because they all have these private tracks.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, we race on Red Bull's one during the season now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Up in Austria.
One little quirk, I guess, is that Honda also makes an engine, but does not have a Formula One team.
Right.
So they just make a Formula One engine and sell it to only one team right now.
Yeah, not a very popular engine.
No, which we'll get into and you'll hear a lot about if you watch a lot of races. I guess for gearheads, the engines are 1.6 liter turbocharged V6 hybrids. Mm. If that matters to you, that turns you on. Another unique feature of F1 cars. So these F1 cars are purpose built for Formula One. Mm. They don't, unlike a lot of other racing series, they don't require that any, road car technology be included in the F1 cars. It's, it's totally the opposite direction. You know, they're not like, you know, stock cars or whatever.
No.
But one of their unique features is something called the drag reduction system, which you'll hear abbreviated DRS. Which refers to the rear spoiler of the car, the rear wing, as it's known. You can actually press a button and have the wing flip parallel to the ground instead of angled downward, right? Like a helicopter blade.
Instead of pushing the air upwards as you move, it goes straight through.
Right.
I guess.
So it reduces your drag.
Yeah.
What that also does is makes the back of your car very unwieldy.
Right.
Because if there's nothing pushing down on it, there's no grip.
Yeah.
So you can only use DRS, which gives you a great speed boost because you don't have that drag anymore. You can only use that on designated straight zones.
Right. And the wings are, because you'll hear a lot is a term called downforce, which is essentially the force that is keeping the car stuck to the road. Because the thing about the way to think about a Formula One car is that it's essentially like an airplane flipped upside down. And when an airplane goes fast, and you can speak to this more than I because you literally fly airplanes, but when an airplane, you know, the wind passes over wings, it's essentially creating a force that brings the airplane into the sky, right?
Lift.
And then the opposite is happening in Formula One cars, where when F1 cars drive fast, when they drive slow, they're actually very unwieldy because they're light and they have a lot of force torque coming out of the engine. But the faster they go, the more they're getting pushed down into the ground by the air passing over them, which then makes it easier for them to take corners fast. It's actually better for them. So you're not allowed to open the DRS on a turn. You also wouldn't want to because it would essentially, you'd lose so much of the downforce at the back of the car, which is where all the power is coming from.
Exactly. Basically, DRS exists to promote passing.
Yes, overtaking. Very overtaking. Important.
Yep. Yeah. Which there's a lot of debate about whether this is real racing or not.
Right.
But I think the compromise here is that these cars produce so much downforce as a result of all that aerodynamics that it makes it very damaging to the tires of the car behind to follow too closely because the tires are exposed.
Right.
Like you look at a NASCAR race, they are an inch behind each other. It's because they don't have to worry about the air damaging their tires.
Right.
So this is a way to have both. It's a way to have an open wheel racing series and promote passing to get people to get closer to each other. Because the trick about DRS is you can actually only open it if you are within 1 second of the car ahead of you. You can't just do it willy-nilly.
Yeah.
So it's literally an overtake button.
Yeah.
And it's by no means guaranteed.
No, not at all.
Like you'll see, and it's actually fun to watch the DRS flap open. You can totally tell when they push it. But it doesn't necessarily mean a pass. The person in front can defend. That's a quirk of F1.
Yeah.
And F2, I think.
Oh, really?
I don't know that there are any other series that do something like this.
They use it, yeah. Formula E is not a thing. Not enough straights.
Speaking of tires and the degradation thereof, are really important in Formula 1.
Yes.
Like, you don't really... That may not be a given. Like Formula E, I think they just, everyone has the same tires. They just stick them on. They last the entire race.
Well, they replace the entire car. So halfway through the race, they get fresh tires by default.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the whole tire thing might be a little tricky for people initially because there's a lot of weird rules.
There's a lot, and there's more now than there ever has been as well. I feel like there's more tires this year.
Yes.
There's more grades of tires.
There's actually 7 different kinds of tires.
Jesus. And the names, if you're new to F1, I'm so sorry about these names because it's becoming farce at this stage.
Yeah. But you don't need to memorize all the different tires because at each race, only 3 of those 7 will be available to use. And there are 7 different ones because they all vary hardness.
Hardness,
Because a softer tire will be stickier and provide you better grip, but won't last as long as the harder tire. Yeah. So you as a driver are required by the rules to use at least 2 different tire compounds during the race. Mm. Which 2 is up to you of the 3.
And which sort of translates to each driver will have a period in the race where they want to be consistently putting in good laps, and they'll have a period of the race where they want to be attacking more or defending against.
Right.
Which is kind of where you want to use your softer stuff. And then that all kind of gets thrown out the window in the case of wet weather, because you can't use a lot of these tires in wet weather. You just slip all over the place. So they use special tires, which have, you know, imagine snow tires. They've got deeper,
They've got grooves.
Grooves in them, which essentially creates more grip when they go fast. Yeah.
And then they don't have, like, that whole 2 tire rule is out the window. Out.
Yeah. Nobody does that.
We'll get into those crazy names later because that's in our like new for 2018 section.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Also, these cars don't refuel.
No,
They used to. Yeah. There are pit stops because they have to change tires, and these tires are designed to degrade, so they don't like you will get 2 or between 1 and 3 pit stops.
Yeah.
It won't just be the one mandatory one to change to the other one. Yeah. You may use up your soft tires. Mm. They'll just start flying apart. So you have to come in to change them. Pit stops are big in
F1. It's big and super fast.
Yeah.
They're like interesting to watch if you've never watched F1 because they're just incredibly blisteringly fast.
Yeah.
Which then accounts for if you fuck up on one, every half second you mess up is a big deal because everyone else is pitting faster. So there's calamities that happen at pit stops where the wrong tires go on, or the tire doesn't go on properly, or the tires weren't out on time, or somebody with a gun who's putting on a wheel did it slightly slower and now that person's lost their position. Like it's super cool. And what's nice about it is that like the big teams mess up and the small teams mess up. It's like Russian roulette every time you come in. Like 9 times out of 10, totally fine. There's not 10 barrels in a revolver. What am I talking about? How many is it? 6, 7? Yeah. I don't know. But then there's that one time where it does. And maybe it happens in a race where it doesn't matter. Maybe it happens in a race where it mattered the most. So it's always like a fun like moment to happen.
It's always tense.
Yeah. And it's like a loot box. It's like video games. It's like anything can happen in it. Maybe it's boring. Maybe it's great.
Some other things you might see during the race. Flags. A yellow flag means slow down and is shown if there's a car or some other debris on the track. Mm. Blue flags will be shown to cars who are being lapped by faster cars, meaning if there's a faster car coming, please move over.
If somebody's in first and they've gone so fast that they're catching up with whoever's in last, basically. And it's a way
which does happen.
Yeah.
Which to me, that initially seemed really lame.
Right, yeah.
Like, we're all in the same race. You're telling me to move over? That's not racing.
Yeah.
But like at that point, the lapped car is no longer even racing the front car. So.
And the types of speeds that are in F1, like you're talking about like lap times being, 1 minute, 40 seconds, right? And like they're long races. They race for like hundreds of miles. So like over the course of 50 laps, when you're like 5 seconds faster than another car, like, of course, you're going to end up overtaking someone,
Yeah. And it's not a given. Like, you are implored to move over if you're the slower car, but it's not like... it will still slow you down,
right,
if you're trying to pass a slower car. So getting through traffic is definitely something to watch out for.
Yeah.
Because if your favorite driver is coming up on the leader and the leader hits traffic, that's a good part for you.
It's exciting.
Yeah.
And not everyone's racing for first place. Like the teams are racing sometimes to get in the top 10. To not even like just to be second last, beat another team that's in their like little,
their realm.
Mini division. Yeah. Realm almost. Right. Yeah. So it's not like, everyone's sad they're not winning. Everyone's fighting their own like race. And the more you watch the sport, the more you'll understand what those little battles are about.
Yeah. And I think that's another thing that took me a little bit to really grasp that, like, well, wait, I don't care, or I'm not just caring about who comes in first.
Right.
Because, I mean, you can do that, but the sport is made so much richer by knowing the capabilities of every team and every driver and seeing when they exceed them.
Yeah.
And so that means that you can have a midfield battle that's really exciting.
Right.
Because there's a story arc to each race. And there's a story arc to the whole season.
Right.
So that's why I watch it. And those things are made even more impactful, I think, the more you learn.
Right.
So that's why we do this podcast.
Yeah. Because it's about the sort of the long narrative of the whole thing. And I was talking to somebody about this recently, not necessarily about F1. I forget what it might have been, football, soccer. I was talking to them about F1 sort of takes the European style of competition, which is like American competition tends to be more tournament focused and sort of knockout. And what I love about that is that you have lots of situations in American sports where minnows end up getting to the Super Bowl, you know, like it doesn't, they don't have to win 20 games and be consistent. They need to,
do well in the playoffs,
in the postseason. Right. And that's kind of the same for a lot of like baseball, and March Madness is another good example, right? It's all just like it's knockout stuff. Whereas a lot of European sports are league format. So like soccer, essentially, right? The Premier League, you've got like 20 odd teams who are playing each other twice a year. They all play each other home and away. And it's not like everyone's fighting for first. Some are trying to get into the top five so they can go play in Europe next year. Some are trying to not get relegated and not be in the bottom three. And that's kind of what F1 is like. It's like they're all having their own little fights. It's not like everyone's going to win every race. But I think as a European, it's easier to digest because it just matches up with like a lot of other, like rugby and like, cricket and stuff like that. That's just kind of the way it's always league format.
Yeah.
Whereas it might be a little bit funny for American audiences that are used to that sort of like tournament. Anyone can get to the final kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Mm. I like the format of Formula One because it seems to me like a TV show.
Yeah, actually,
because
it's not a soap opera.
It's not your team playing a whole new different team of people you don't know. It's the same people doing the same thing,
right,
just in a different place.
And you know who the main characters are in a soap, right? The main characters are going to be the main characters for like years.
Right.
Like they're the best drivers. They're the biggest pull, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean all the subplots aren't fun.
Exactly. Yeah. Other things you might see in the race, if something really bad happens, the safety car will come out.
Yeah.
So if they want to slow everyone down on track, they bring out the safety car, which is like a pace car that everyone stacks up behind so that the safety car can lead them by the stranded car or whatever while they get a tow truck.
It looks like a regular car once it's beside the F1 cars, but it's like still like a super fast Audi or something, right? Yeah. It's like a really nice car, but
I think it's a Mercedes.
It's a Merkur, yeah.
It's really funny watching it because it looks like it is flying around this track, right. But then the F1 cars right behind it look like they're crawling.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's like a really fast car because it has to get around so fast.
Yeah.
To get in front of the first car, number one, so they can do it. Yeah, and then sometimes they don't even need to bring out the car. Sometimes they just bring out a virtual version of it.
Yes, the virtual safety car, which in effect basically means, all right, everybody, slow down where you are right now. Everyone on track. It's sort of like a full course yellow in IndyCar.
Yeah, where everyone, the way they manage the time or speed is by setting like a maximum time they can do the lap in, but the car essentially sort of computes that down into this is the speed you need to be going. Yeah. So everyone just sort of slows down a bit.
You can also have a red flag.
Yes.
Which means the race is suspended.
Yeah.
It can be restarted, but it basically means like, all right, everybody come in. There's too much craziness happening out there. Either a real bad crash or really, really bad weather.
Yes.
We'll do that as well. Too much rain, cars sliding off all
dangerous,
over the place.
Like, stuff like that. And then if it gets to the point where they can't do it at all, you get a black flag. Just the race is over.
Is that what?
I think
a black flag is disqualification.
Oh, you're right. Sorry, it is. God. Yeah.
Yeah.
My bad. That happens too. And then what's the circle one?
Double red? Oh, the circle.
The circle one's weird.
Black flag with an orange circle, right? I think that means
something's broken on your car. Get the fuck off the track.
Come into the pits, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever seen that.
I think we got one 2 years ago.
With Kimi?
Somebody who wouldn't come in. Or Vettel or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, huh? That one.
Yeah.
That one that's like.
You have to look that up.
Yeah.
So drivers will get penalties for stuff,
right?
For illegal moves, like if you cut a corner, or if you crash into somebody, and that those will either be administered as time penalties. Like if you get a 5 second penalty, then you come into the pits. And I love this part. All the pit guys like hover around the car for 5 seconds while the penalty happens. And then they move in once it's done. Yeah. Then they go, and then they send them off.
Do the thing. Yeah. And you get these for like dangerous driving or like not driving into somebody, like overtaking badly and crashing into them, or
unsportsmanlike conduct.
Yeah. Or like cutting corners, like you said, like doing stuff anywhere where you like gain an advantage. They'll try and penalize you. And it takes a while to like learn which ones are which. And like a lot of the time during races, there's debate as to like, how bad is that? And race control.
Did he mean to do that? Or is that just racing?
Right. And the way this sort of like happens during the broadcast is that we will know as a viewing audience that race control is looking into an incident. And then a couple of laps later, they will have made a decision up in their little box. And then that comes up on the screen. And then that's when the driver finds out as well. Right before. How sometimes they penalize them, sometimes they just add some time to the end of their race. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to penalize them with like 10 laps left, they don't want to bring them in. It's like, oh, we'll just add it to the end of your
sometimes time. They'll have them give a position back.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll have them, like, this is a really stiff penalty, but they'll have them drive through the pits.
Right.
And not pit. It's called drive through penalty, which basically equates to like 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Because you have to slow down to 50 miles an hour or 80 kilometers an hour in the pit lane. Mm. So doing that for the entire length of the pit lane loses you 20 seconds, which is a lot.
A lot of time. Yeah.
And I guess one more thing we'll say about penalties. It's a board of three stewards, as they're called, that administer the penalty. Mm. And at least one of them is a former or current driver.
Okay.
So they do have the driver's perspective, on these penalties.
Stewards up there, marshals on the track.
Right.
That's what the listener told us years ago. Because the marshals are the people who wave the flags.
Yeah.
A lot of the flags are digital. They're like screens, but they also have folks out there.
They have a little like board with a bunch of LEDs that turns into a flag.
Like a rectangle. It's just like flashing lights, basically.
Yeah.
Like a big, Street light or somewhere in the middle of the two of those, and then you have the people who basically, like, whenever anyone crashes, they run in to help them out, get them out of the car, or if there's like debris on the track, they run out and get it and fall over on television that everyone laughs. And those people work for the circus and will do lots of them. Well, some of them don't, some of them are like
a lot of them are volunteers,
For sure, but they don't, like, all of those people don't, they're like local folks, most of the actual folks doing it themselves.
By the way, f1.com, the website, the official website, has a great page called Inside F1. Ooh. With great descriptions of all these rules and car regulations. And if you ever, like, if you're watching something and just want to pause it and look something up, f1.com and Inside F1 pages are really straightforward to understand. Okay, teams and drivers.
All right. Let's see who's in the lineup this year.
So there is, Reddit makes a spotter's guide every year with basically here's what each car looks like, and here's what each driver's helmet looks like.
Okay.
So we will link to that at the show notes on f1.cool.
Awesome.
I'm not as good at memorizing helmet paint jobs and instead look at the camera pod, which is a little, it looks like a T, and sits on the very top of the car above, like, the air intake above the driver's head.
So it's almost like if the seat was a throne, it would be the thing on top of it. It's like right there.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that is a different color. It's black if it's the primary driver,
right?
And yellow if it's the secondary driver. And that's not a, like, the teams will tell you we don't have a primary or secondary driver. Right. Both of them, we treat them the same. But it's based, I think, roughly on seniority. Like the first one, the one who's been at the team the longest is the primary driver. Mm. So he gets the black one. Obviously, if you're new to F1, you won't know who has been there the longest.
Right.
But you can say, oh, Ricardo, he's the Red Bull with the black. And that's easiest for me to spot instantly.
Yeah, for sure. And we say he because there are no female drivers in F1 on the circuit. There have been in the past some, and there are team owners and principals and engineers and pit crew people and test drivers and things like that. But we still haven't in the modern era a female driver on the grid every single week.
Yeah, the last time a woman was that took place in any part of a race weekend was a few years ago, Susie Wolf.
Yes.
Interestingly, the wife of Toto Wolf, the team principal, the main dude of Mercedes, actually is a driver and took part in a practice session with another team, Williams.
Right. Yeah.
And they're kind of related because Williams uses Mercedes engines. But this year we do have a reserve driver. For Sauber.
Okay.
So if something happens to a Sauber driver, she would sub in.
That's awesome. I actually didn't realize that.
Yeah.
That's
brilliant. She just got announced for the team. Cool. So it's a fairly new development. But okay. So, in this rundown, we'll list the teams in the order they finished the Constructors' Championship last year.
Okay.
And with each team's driver, we'll list the primary driver first. Right. Okay. So Mercedes, they won last year.
Yeah.
It's a silver car. Mm. They're a German team. And they're sort of the Yankees or the Patriots or... Manchester United?
I don't know. Are they, though? Because I'd say that's Ferrari, because, like, dynasty-wise, like, they're having a really good 5-6 years.
In the long term, Ferrari is that one. But in the last 5 years or so, it's Mercedes. They're just...
Dominant.
Yeah. In the past 4 years, Mercedes has won the Constructors' Championship 4 times. Right. And Mercedes drivers have won the Drivers' Championship 4 times.
Yeah.
As mentioned, their team principal, the head of the team, is a guy named Toto Wolff, who sounds exactly like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes, and if you think Toto Wolff is the weirdest name you're going to hear on this podcast, let me tell you, it's pretty normal in comparison to some of these.
Their drivers, Lewis Hamilton from Great Britain. Mm. He's the one to beat.
Yes,
he is F1's biggest star right now. He's won 3 of the last 4 drivers' championships. And another one in 2008, one of only 2 drivers to have won, current drivers to have won 4 championships. Yeah.
prolific driver. If you're new to the sport as well, he's easy to spot because he's basically the only black driver that has ever been in F1. Maybe I'm wrong in saying that actually, but I'm pretty sure. Certainly at this level.
It's a rarity.
Yeah. He's British. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of drivers, he grew up on go-karts doing that stuff and made his way through and was prolific at a very, very young age. He's a prodigy. He won a championship at a very young age. He could have won it even earlier, but he sort of messed up in the season where he almost won it the first year. He's incredible. He also was a bit of a sort of a rogue character kind of for a couple of years there. Just because he was outspoken more than anything else in a sport where everyone is very pinned up. He was slightly less pinned up, I think.
Yeah.
And he got a reputation for himself. There might be an ageist or a race thing in there as well, a little bit. He's a cool customer who is, I don't know. Now he's a lot calmer when he talks to the press.
Yeah.
If last season was anything, he's very, very consistent and he's not as temperamental as perhaps he was painted as in the past.
Yeah, as long as I've been watching the sport, he seems to never make mistakes and keeps very cool under pressure. Mm. He also is as rags to riches as it gets in Formula One.
Yeah, he is. He is. He's it reminds me, and it's not just the race element of it, but it reminds me of Venus Williams and Serena Williams, where it's not coming from a lot of these drivers come from racing backgrounds, mm-hmm. or they come from upper middle class or wealthier back, because it's an expensive sport. It's like horse racing, but more expensive, right? The cool thing is a lot of drivers have gotten in through, even the go-karting stuff, that's an expensive thing to send your kid to, right? And Hamilton's family was very much I think they were kind of all in on it when they realized he had a passion for it. And that's a similar story to a lot of drivers, who just were really good at go-kart stuff. Nico Rosberg was a similar thing, but even he came from racing stuff. He is kind of the I wouldn't maybe not rags, but but as close as you
much
can
as
get.
It gets in Formula One.
Totally, yeah.
There's a good HBO segment about Lewis and his family, particularly his brother Nicholas, who is also a racing driver despite having cerebral palsy.
I know, it's amazing.
It's an amazing story. Yeah. So we'll link that and a ton of other stuff on F1.cool.
Yeah. Sometimes you see Nicholas on the paddock, maybe less so now.
Yeah, he comes to races.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Lewis's dad, who used to be his manager, used to be a lot more at races, but he's still around.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. It's a weird family thing. You'll get to know a lot of these people's extended family and partners and wives and friends and stuff like that. It's weird.
Yeah. Also on Mercedes, the other driver, Valtteri Bottas.
Mm, the opposite
how's,
of
how's that
Hamilton?
One for you? yeah, pretty much. Yeah. He is Finnish.
Yes.
He is one of two Finns on the field, both of whom are very stoic.
Yes.
Bottas will be racing his second year with Mercedes. He was at another team called Williams before. He is also very calm, cool, and collected. And one of my personal favorites because of how... He's very humble, but he just gets it done. He's not flashy at all. A lot of people think he's boring, and they're right. But that's kind of why I like him.
Yeah.
Most Formula One drivers are very flamboyant personalities, which is interesting because a lot of the teams try to rein them in.
Yeah.
Less so now. I think Ferrari now lets their drivers have social media accounts.
Oh my God,
which
that's
is
funny.
It has not been like that in the past. But Valtteri Bottas is also just a great driver.
Yeah.
You don't get to Mercedes without being a great driver. Yeah. And I became a fan of him watching him at his old team.
Right.
They've not had a great car for a long time, but he still drove the wheels off.
And this year will be more interesting because last year was his first time and he was very much a number two driver, first year in the big leagues, as it were.
Yeah.
He doesn't have that sort of safety blanket this year. And you could see him fighting last year. When he won races, he was super happy. And and he's gotten into fights with Kimi and other people. He's boring, but there's some interesting situations he's been in as well. So looking forward to seeing how he does this year.
Yeah. Next up, Ferrari. Maybe you've heard of them.
Mm.
They're the red car.
Yes.
They're from Italy. They undoubtedly have the most rabid fan base.
Yes.
So when you go to the race in Italy, it's... insane.
The Tifosi. They refer to them as.
Yeah, they have their own.
They have a name. Yeah.
Exactly. You also refer to them, referred to as the team as Scuderia Ferrari.
Yes.
There's another Italian team, Scuderia Toro Rosso. Scuderia is the name in Italian for a stable of racing horses.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's cool.
They were dominant, as you mentioned, Danny, for a long time, from 99 to 2008.
Yes, but a lot of which would be on the back of a driver called Michael Schumacher, who you may have heard of.
Yeah.
He's one of the more famous sort of in pop culture drivers.
Yeah, he's sort of the Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
But since I started watching in 2014, they were, you know, kind of right in the trough of that slump.
Right.
Since 2008, but they've only gotten better and better. So that's actually been kind of fun to watch. Their team principal is a guy named, I just love all the Italian names, Maurizio Arrivabene.
He looks exactly how it sounds.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he's a very handsome, gray-bearded man.
Yeah, sideburns.
Yeah.
He's characteristically colorful, but also uncharacteristically for Ferrari, candid. So yeah. I like him a lot.
Yeah.
Their drivers are Sebastian Vettel.
Yes.
Who is the guy, the other guy in the field who has four championships.
Right.
Dave Lang calls him the mayor of F1.
Okay.
Which makes sense because he's always complaining about other drivers' conduct on track.
Yep.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he could quote the sporting regulations to you.
Yeah. While also frequently being a brat in his own right on the tracks and not like calling himself out. I mean, it was the last year he intentionally crashed into Lewis Hamilton. Yeah. Like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah. Totally lost his cool.
Yeah. Speaking of losing his cool. His teammate is the other stoic Finn.
Yeah.
Kimi Raikkonen. Who is famously totally, I don't know, has no, he definitely has an ego, but maybe he either has no ego or he has so much ego that he just doesn't have time to talk to anyone.
I mean,
I can't tell.
Of everyone in the field, Kimi runs his own race.
Yeah.
Marches to the beat of his own drum.
Yep. The engineers have to do what he wants.
Yeah.
He's short with them.
He's a fan favorite.
Yeah.
Because of just how strange he is.
But he's a fan favorite, like, weirdly in, like, the East as well.
Yeah.
Like,
Japan loves Kimi Raikkonen.
I don't know, like, what's going on there, but yeah.
For example, one of his greatest quotes is, "Leave me alone, I know what I'm doing."
Yes.
He yells that to his team a lot.
And one time when they interviewed him and they asked, "Did you see Michael Schumacher picking up the trophy?" He said, "I was having a shit." So, yeah.
My favorite Kimi Raikkonen story is when he crashed in Monaco. Instead of going back to the garage, he just hopped the fence, climbed aboard his friend's yacht, and grabbed a beer.
Yeah, and watched the rest of the race on in like a chair.
Yeah. He also has an Instagram account for everyone out there.
I'm surprised.
Yeah, it's new.
Okay.
It's great.
Is it?
All right. Next team, Red Bull, as mentioned. They use Renault engines. They are a dark blue car, nice matte finish, which I like, and they are an Austrian team.
They were dominant for years. Sebastian Vettel won his four championships.
They are wizards with aerodynamics, thanks to a genius of a guy named Adrian Newey. And their team principal is Christian Horner, a cheeky Brit married to Ginger Spice.
Oh god, really?
Yeah,
I forgot about it. Jerry Halliwell, eh?
Yeah.
All right.
If you're watching the races on Sky or on ESPN, which is using the Sky feed, you may hear from him during the race, which is always kind of fun. Like, hey, Christian, what's going on? You know.
We're not winning, but we're doing all right.
Yeah. Their drivers, I think, are my favorites.
Yeah, maybe the most fun duo of the lot. Yeah,
absolutely. Daniel Ricciardo.
Yes.
He's Australian. He smiles all the time. He's hilarious.
He's a handsome man. He maybe has the most normal name on the thing, even though it's kind of spelled Ricciardo.
Right.
Yeah, and some of the Italians refer to him as Ricciardo.
And some British commentators as well.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but it's Ricardo.
Yeah.
He says Ricardo.
Yes. He's Australian.
He's Australian. Yeah. He's really funny. And I just want to see him do well because I like the guy.
Yeah, he's great. He's great, and as is his teammate.
As is his teammate, Max Verstappen.
Yes, son of a Formula One driver himself, Jos Verstappen.
Mm-hmm.
this is another, he's like another, you know, prodigy, like just incredibly young.
He started,
was he 19 when he started? Was he younger?
17
when he started. Yes, so
he became the youngest driver ever to be in F1.
He could not race a street car. He could not drive a street car in like lots of European countries.
Yeah.
Let alone buy a beer or buy a lottery ticket. But he was able to drive F1 cars around. Yeah, great driver, one of the best on the field. The usual narrative of him being a little bit of a wild card when he was young.
Yeah.
But he's like pretty screwed on for his age.
Yes, and holds his own quite well against the other veterans.
Yeah, maybe the best overtaker in F1. Like, he just finds gaps where there no one else does.
This one race, Brazil 2016, in the rain, where he made everyone look silly.
Yeah.
Just blew by everyone. That was the moment where I was like, oh man, this guy is...
Yeah.
Like is destined for a legendary career.
Totally. He was like, he emulated Senna in Senna's backyard.
Yeah. He holds records for the youngest driver to lead a lap, to set the fastest lap, score points, secure a podium, and is the youngest Formula One Grand Prix winner in history.
Right. Unbelievable. Youngest Grand Prix winner to drink out of a shoe. Probably as well, thanks to his teammate.
Yeah,
Daniel Ricciardo, when he wins races, sometimes does a thing called a shoey, which is a Australian tradition of drinking beer out of a shoe that you have worn, like a worn shoe.
Yeah, he takes off his race boot, pours champagne in it.
Yep. So many famous people have fallen foul out of it, including Jean-Luc Picard himself, Patrick Stewart. So, yeah.
And Gerard Butler.
Gerard Butler as well, yeah. Yep. There's a lot of famous... F1 fans that you will see at races, like Matt LeBlanc. I mean, that's obvious, he hosts Top Gear. But yeah, there's lots of other like famous singers and actors and stuff that just love this shit.
Cameras love to cut to them.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Ron Atkinson. You'll see Mr. Bean grimacing in the back of someone's...
I think he had a McLaren F1 and crashed it.
Oh no, really?
Yeah.
God. Wait, P1 or F1? An F1 car?
No, the model. Oh, McLaren, right.
Okay,
F1.
Yeah. Wow, jeez.
Next up, a team called Force India, which is a cool name.
It's so normal to me now, but yeah, that still must be barmy when you hear it for the first time. Force India.
They use Mercedes engines. Mm. They are based in England, despite the name.
Yes.
Pretty much every team has an office in England, but a lot of them are owned by, I guess... people or bodies that are in other countries. But
right.
This one is co-owned by an Indian man named Vijay Mallya.
Yes.
Who looks like the Indian Guy Fieri.
Yes.
And is currently wanted by Indian authorities for fraud and money laundering.
Yeah, he sure is.
He's living in the UK and has so far not been extradited. So that's
news
fun.
For him. It's a good thing there's no Indian Grand Prix, because then he probably wouldn't be able to make it down there. The chassis is actually the VJM 11 as well. So, yeah. Little tip of the hat there.
I like Force India because they punch above their weight.
Yeah.
Not only are they an underdog because they're not as well funded as those other three teams.
And they're a relatively new team.
And they're relatively new, but because they have this garbage with their co-owner going on, like the legal trust, that can't be easy for the team.
Right.
But yeah, despite all that, they are constantly in the mix, especially with each other. Their teammates last year clashed quite a few times, which is really exciting. Sergio Perez.
The Mexican.
Perez.
I keep
wanting to say it like the British people do.
Perez, yeah.
Perez.
Yeah, And Esteban Ocon.
Perez is one of only two drivers this year from North or South America.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
Wow. Who's the other?
Lance Stroll. From Canada.
Wow. There's no South American drivers this year. No Brazilians.
Nope.
Since Felipe Massa left. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Pastor, get back here. Buddy.
He shows up in the news, by the way.
Oh, he does? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay. While his teammate, Esteban Ocon, is one of three French drivers this year.
Yeah.
And the French Grand Prix is coming back. So it's a really good year for French F1 fans.
Yeah,
actually.
There we go. Perez, very consistent. He ended a streak last year where he scored points in 17 consecutive races.
That's great.
However, he holds the record among current drivers for the longest time without a win in any racing series.
Oh, no.
His last win came in the GP2 series, which is the predecessor to Formula 2, in 2010.
Oh, geez.
2,648 days.
Oh, my God.
His teammate Esteban Ocon entered F1 in 2016, taking over at a team called Manor, which is no longer around, halfway through the season from driver Rio Haryanto.
Mm.
But we won't hold that against
his
him.
His name is Rio, and he's not driving in F1 anymore.
Esteban Ocon also holds the all-time record for the most consecutive finishes from the start of his career with 27. So that's also very consistent.
Impressive, considering there are two Finnish drivers on the roster here. I feel bad for Perez's record, because there are also drivers who have never won. So fact that he has a record that's he hasn't won in a while. It's at least he won.
That's true. Not in Formula One.
I guess, yeah. he won something sometime.
Yes. All right, next up.
Who's next? Yeah, I don't know even who would be next on this list.
Williams.
Right, okay, yeah, I guess.
They have been in Formula One for a long time as well. They are one of the few teams that does not... Or is this wrong? They're the big car manufacturers, but then there are also little manufacturers. Sauber, I think, makes little track cars.
Oh, really?
And I think Williams also makes
cars? Williams does, but they're more top end, lower production, low, not mass produced kind of stuff. Yeah.
But they are very much a family run. The team principal is Frank Williams, and the deputy team principal is Claire Williams. There's also a great documentary about them called Williams on Netflix. So if you want to get to know a team on a personal level, it's a really good documentary.
Right.
I recommend it.
Actually, I'm going to talk about another one when we come up to another team as well.
Okay. They also have as their reserve driver a guy named Robert Kubica.
Oh, yeah.
Who used to be in F1 for a long time and did really well, and then was racing in a rally race and injured, almost severed his arm.
Yeah.
And it has been this comeback story for him to get to Formula One and be able to race in a Formula
One
car.
His motor movement in, I believe it's his left hand, because that was the outsider. That was the window side, I think, when he crashed, is pretty bad. And but F1 obviously requires that you're doing a lot of finger movements and stuff. Mm-hmm. Apparently they made some sort of changes to the car and got him back in. He's great. Polish driver, very popular in Europe, very popular on the paddock. He's a nice dude. I think a lot of people have a lot of goodwill for him. He also has his own energy drink in Poland, but then Mike Tyson does too. So what can you say about that? Yeah, and he was also in one of the worst crashes I've ever seen, but it was one that he didn't walk away from, but he had a really bad crash in Canada, which is shown a lot as one of the worst F1 crashes, but also a testament to the safety of F1 cars and the monocoque that sort of protects everyone in it. Yep. Great guy. I'd love to see him. He almost got the main seat there. They filled it with another new driver I don't really know much about. But it's at least cool to see him as a reserve. I'm happy. We'll see him on the track sometime. That'll be cool.
He will be doing 3 practice sessions during the season.
Cool. Awesome.
But their primary, Williams' primary driver is a guy named Lance Stroll.
Yeah. Knew enough himself.
Yeah. The only other, any kind of American.
Crazy. Yeah.
European Formula 3 champ in 2016, has also raced in the Rolex 24 Hours race twice. The son of a billionaire.
Jesus. So, fair enough.
Silver spoon.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of the negativity around him for that reason, and the people just say that he bought his way in.
Right.
There's a lot of that kind of, detrimental things said to a lot of these drivers who come with sponsorship. People assume that they're only there because they come with money.
Right.
Not that they have any driving prowess. I personally think a lot of the negativity surrounding Lance Stroll is overblown, but he is an erratic driver. At least he was last year.
Yeah.
Terrible at qualifying, but I guess decent enough in races. He got his first podium in third place at the 2017 Azerbaijan Grand Prix, which was an absolutely insane race. Right. If you want to go back and watch a race from last year, watch Azerbaijan.
Right.
So he became the second youngest driver to finish an F1 race on the podium, and the youngest to do so during his rookie season. So,
right.
He can drive a car.
I just looked up his dad. Sorry, I didn't know anything about that.
He's
Lawrence Stroll.
Yes.
They say he is a Canadian investor and collector of vintage Ferraris. So maybe he's hoping Lance gets a different team.
He brought Ralph Lauren to Canada.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Lance Stroll's Canadian, did I say that? And he also invested early in Tommy Hilfiger.
Wow, he's a fashion man.
He's a fashion man. Yeah. He's a billionaire fashion
fashionable man.
In Canada. His teammate, Lance Stroll's teammate, that is a guy named Sergei Sorotkin. And if you couldn't tell, he is Russian. He's one of the two strict rookies.
Okay.
There are two other drivers who drove a little bit last year, but he has not driven in a Formula One race yet. He's 22 years old. Was part of Renault's driver development program last year and did four practice sessions, but was passed over on that team for Carlos Sainz.
Right.
Before that, he was in GP2, has raced in other junior categories against a lot of the other drivers in the field, has a degree in race car engineering from the Moscow Automobile and Road Construction University.
Wow.
And
is that
also
real, or did he just put that on his... I have a degree in weed from the Kingston University of Jobless.
I also think he looks like a hacker who's living in the real world of the Matrix.
Okay. Google Sergei Sorotkin.
Plus
sure.
Everything the body needs.
He's yeah, exactly. Ignorance is bliss. He's 22 years old.
Yes. And before F1, he was in GP2, coming in third in both 2015 behind Van Dorn and Rossi.
Okay.
And 2016 behind Gasly and Giovinazzi.
Right.
So he's up there.
Yeah, he's in good company.
Next team, Renault. They're a yellow car. They're a French company. Renault teams have been around since 1977 in Formula One, but they were out for a few years and took over the Lotus team in 2016, which is no longer around. Mm. Their drivers are Nico Hülkenberg, who has been in F1 since 2010 and has never been on the podium.
Oh, it sucks. He's a nice dude.
129 races.
Right.
A record.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Gosh, what a bad record.
Yeah. He's got chops, though. He won the 24 Hours of Le Mans.
Yeah.
And is a GP2 and European Formula 3 champion. Mm. So, guy can race. He's bounced around quite a bit from Williams to Force India to Sauber, back to Force India.
Yeah, he really has, hasn't he? Jesus.
Yep, all over the place. His teammate is Carlos Sainz Jr., who started in F1 at Toro Rosso in 2015, where he was teammates with Max Verstappen. Mm.
Toro Rosso, by the way, is literally Italian for Red Bull.
Yes.
So that's their second team. We'll get to that.
Yeah, they have a B team, basically.
Yeah.
It's the incubator.
Okay.
He came to Renault last year in the middle of the year, replacing a guy named Palmer. He's the son of a legendary rally driver and somehow always seems to mix it up with another Spaniard,
right.
Fernando Alonso, yeah. Which is fun to watch. All right. Speaking of Toro Rosso, they are blue and red.
Mm.
They are based in Italy, but owned by Red Bull.
Yeah.
They will be the only ones using Honda engines this year.
Oh, boy.
There was only one team the last 3 or 4 years using Honda engines.
And we haven't gotten to them yet, which tells you how good they are.
how good they did last year. The Honda engines have a terrible reputation.
Yes.
So Toro Rosso is taking their lives in their hands.
Yeah.
With this.
So the narrative will either be what have Toro Rosso done going with Honda, or they have an amazing Honda engine this year. And then like, oh my God, poor McLaren.
Yeah.
So after suffering through Honda for like 4 seasons, I think. Yeah, absolutely.
This fun little tidbit I came across and didn't know. The team's first and only pole position, podium, and victory were scored by Sebastian Vettel in the 2008 Italian Grand Prix.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
Their drivers are relatively new faces. They've both raced in 5 and 4 races, respectively, last year.
Wow.
So these are... Both of them will be running their first years in Formula One.
That's crazy.
The first is Pierre Gasly, who's French. He won the GP2 championship in 2016 and raced in Super Formula in Japan in 2017 for Team Mugen. So he must be a fighting game fan.
It's him and Homer in a poncho.
Right.
Yeah.
Omega Tom Hanks. and narrowly came in second in the championship in Super Formula. He also has raced 2 Formula E races.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Which... I think is the only current driver to have raced any Formula E.
Yes. Yes. There are lots of Formula E drivers who were ex-F1, but I don't think there's any current that have gone the other way around. No.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So
Formula E is the entirely electric Formula One-esque division.
Racing series, yeah. Which, it's kind of bonkers, so we're fans of it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
His teammate is Brendan Hartley.
Yes, Australian.
Nope.
New Zealand.
There you go.
Whoops, sorry, everyone. Sorry, guys.
He has a great endurance racing pedigree, actually. He won the World Endurance Championship in 2015 alongside Timo Bernhard and Mark Webber.
All right, Mark Webber.
And
Mark
again,
Webber from New Zealand.
Right. And again in 2017, which included a win at Le Mans.
Right, okay. He's young, too.
He
looks like somebody who skateboarded and accidentally fell into an F1 car.
Yeah.
Like he looks like an extreme sports guy to me, or like a surfer, maybe.
And I guess he's like 28 or something.
Yeah, I guess,
Not that young. But he was actually a Red Bull reserve driver back in 2009.
Yes, for a while, yeah.
So this has been a long time coming.
Yeah. He's a good guy. He's a fun interviewer as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's very just like, says what he wants kind of thing.
Nice.
He used to have a reputation for being a little bit kooky, but he seems to have calmed down a bit.
All right. Next team, Haas.
Haas
and team.
American.
They're American team.
That's, you know, they're American because they got a French guy in the car.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they have Ferrari engines.
Right, yeah. And where's Magnussen? Danish? Yeah, yep. Like a Danish guy.
Their car is gray and red.
Yeah.
Pretty boring. They are a brand new team that entered F1 in 2016.
Yeah.
Which you would contrast with all the other teams, which basically just changed names.
Right.
Like someone will come in, like Renault, they came in and just, well, this is a special case, but
right.
Someone will come in and just buy the Formula One team
and it's change easier to
the
do
name
that.
On it. Yeah. This one started from the ground up.
Yeah.
Gene Haas co-owns the Stuart Haas NASCAR team.
Mm.
The first American team to compete in Formula One since 1986.
Yowza.
I like this team not just because they're American, but also for their startup-y nature, I guess. They're garage. They build as little as possible themselves.
Mm.
So they, to keep costs down, Ferrari supplies their engine and I think a lot of other parts. Dallara, I always get this pronunciation. Dallara? Dallara.
I don't know.
I think it's Dallara.
Yeah, I think so.
They supply their chassis.
Mm.
So Dallara is like, they make all the IndyCar chassis.
Right.
And last year they had problems with their brakes, which you definitely don't want.
No, you don't want that. It's like a shame as well, because the especially when they first came on the scene, man, that first
they scored sixth and fifth on their insane. First two races.
Yeah, it was like, oh my God, they're going to shake the whole thing up. And it's I don't know. Everyone else kind of progressed in research and got better, and they kind of stay where they were, and they fell back a little bit.
I mean, you got to think, like, they have zero historical data.
Right, right. Yeah.
So this will be their third year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Hopefully, they do well. They've settled into, in the past few years, they settled into like a nice mid-pack team.
Yeah.
But I'm always rooting for them. Mm. Their drivers are, as you said, the Frenchman, Romain Grosjean.
He looks very French.
Yes.
If you ever watched GameSpot.com, he looks like Chris Waters, who I used to work with.
A French Chris Waters. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. He has been with Haas since its inception and has scored most of their points.
Mm.
Long time F1 fans may recall that Grosjean took over Nelson Piquet Jr.'s seat as a result of the Crashgate conspiracy.
Oh yeah. Oh my goodness.
Which we're not going to talk about that, but you should look it up. It's great.
We'll get to it when we come to the Singapore Grand Prix.
There you go. Let's see. I got a bunch of other stuff. He became the first driver ever to earn a race ban after causing a pileup in Belgium in 2012. That is a crazy crash. It's the one where he cartwheels across Sebastian Vettel.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That was Grosjean.
That was right at the start.
Yeah.
Because he went over Alonso, right? Was that the...
Oh, maybe it was Alonso.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. Yeah, that's not a good place to try and go to any inside. It's like the worst corner maybe for doing that.
Yeah.
At the start of a race. Ugh.
But he had a reputation for crashing into people a lot, but has since gotten his act together.
Yeah.
So the following year after that Belgium crash, he earned six podiums. So
all right.
He's good. He also took his life in his hands and raced for 2 years as teammate to Pastor Maldonado.
Right. Yes. Who we'll apparently talk about later for some reason.
Yes.
Which I'm
and he wrote a cookbook with his wife, Marion.
Did he really?
Yeah.
What's it? Do you know?
It's called Cuisine et Confidences.
Okay, I guess it's not for the English speaking market. Cuisine, I can't find, what does that mean?
I can't find any reviews.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a shame. It's like Daniel Ricciardo's beer. It exists somewhere, but fucking no one's ever had it. So right.
It's a front.
It's only for rich people, apparently. Yep. Yeah.
His teammate on the Haas team, Kevin Magnussen.
K-Mag.
A Dane.
Yeah.
From Denmark.
Dane Judy Kevin Magnussen.
He joined Haas last season, replacing Esteban Gutierrez, yes. Son of former F1 driver Jan Magnussen, who also raced in CART for a number of years in the 90s.
All right.
So some Americans might know that name.
CART.
Started in F1 with McLaren in 2014, then went to Renault, then went to Haas. Also, this is from Wikipedia. Between participating in Formula Ford in 2008 and unexpectedly securing sponsorship for Formula Renault in 2009, Magnussen was forced to abandon his racing career and work as a factory welder due to his lack of funding.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
A welder. That's if they ever do like the story of his life, like in a Hollywood like biopic or something. Yeah. Could just imagine
he flips up the face mask.
Yeah,
Kevin, we need you back.
And he's like, okay, I can build my own car now. I'm a welder. I know the tools.
That's basically the plot of Days of Thunder.
Okay, right.
All right, next team, McLaren. Oh, as Jesus. Mentioned before, they're an orange car.
Yes,
which is new this year.
Yes,
it's very.
It's a throwback. It's a throwback to an old sort of style.
They're an English team. Mm. They will be using Renault engines this year.
Yes, they got rid of the Hondas.
Yes. The team McLaren used to be awesome. Mm. Ever heard of Senna? He drove for McLaren. Yeah. He actually drove for McLaren powered by a Honda engine.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be the whole thing.
Totally.
Honda, hey, we're making an F1 engine again. Yeah. We're teaming up with McLaren, getting the band back together.
Remember the good old days? Yeah.
Yeah. Did not happen.
If you're new to F1 and you want to watch an F1 movie, Senna is probably a good. It's not contemporary at all. It's about the sort of 90s and 80s era, but it charts the story of the sort of, I don't know, the who's the most famous, like, what would be the famous equivalent? Who's that baseball guy? Used to have heart attacks and eat steak and drink beer. What was his name again?
Babe Ruth.
He's like actually, that's mean because they said he's really fit, so maybe that doesn't work. But he's like the idol of F1 drivers around the world today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great documentary.
Yeah, super stuff. And in fact, about this team in particular as well, there was a miniseries on Netflix last year called, was it just Race Driver?
Oh, it's on Amazon. Oh, and it came out in between these two seasons called Grand Prix Driver.
That's it. It's such a generic name.
And it's not even about the Grand Prix Driver. It's more about the team.
It's about McLaren, and it's about them, their preseason last year. Almost to the point where this looked like they were making a documentary about the entire year and like just cut it off when they realized the engine was shit.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of how it feels. But it's unbelievably candid.
Yeah.
About them trying to get the, like working with Honda and like the language barrier problems and that it wasn't working right. And like, it was all shot by them in their incredible offices. Like, it's like
a spaceship.
Totally. It looks like a Bond villain, like place or something. Layer. It's really good. It's only 4 episodes long and it's a pretty good primer for the two drivers, but also just like how F1 teams kind of work. I feel like it's a really good, and you can watch it pretty quick. They're like 25 minutes each.
Yeah.
You can jump in.
I think it's effectively, like a two hour
thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, very well produced. And it does give you, again, another personal connection, which is sometimes hard to get from a team angle. That's why the Williams one, I think, is really valuable because you don't get the personal stories behind. Like, you get the driver thing because there's this cult of personality and like the media is always writing about them. But like the team itself, I find that stuff really valuable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's on Amazon. Their drivers, number one, Fernando Alonso.
Arguably the best driver on the circuit, maybe.
Yes.
Like multiple world championship winner. I think he's won three.
Two,
really? Okay, he's looking
2005 and 2006 with Renault, and a three-time runner-up in 2010, 2012, and 2013 with Ferrari.
Right. Yeah.
After which he left in 2014 to go to McLaren Honda.
Right. And it hasn't been
with
great.
His fingers crossed.
Yeah, and his deck chair ready.
Yeah.
Great driver. Been in a bad car. So we'll see what happens this year.
Started in F1 in 2001 with Raikkonen. So one of the older veterans.
Yeah, crazy.
Started karting at age 3. So this dude knows a thing or two.
It was his sister's kart as well. Yeah, they bought it for his sister, and his sister was like kind of into it. And then he had a go of it, and he was like way more into it. And they were like, uh-oh, I guess he's going to be doing this.
What's been fun about McLaren sucking recently, actually, has been the fact that Alonso has gotten real bored.
Yeah.
And went to race the Indy 500 last year.
Yeah.
And actually led 27 laps and was running in seventh with 21 laps to go when, guess what?
Yeah.
His Honda engine exploded.
It's absurd. It's like the worst punchline over and over again. So, yeah, we'll talk about how they're doing in preseason, I'm guessing, later on. But, yeah.
He's also doing Le Mans this year.
Right.
His teammate, Stoffel Vandoorne.
Another young guy.
His first season was last year, and the documentary actually focuses on him a lot.
Yes.
Because it's his first season, and he seems like a cool dude.
Belgian.
Belgian, yes. Mm-hmm. A runner-up to the aforementioned Julian Palmer in GP2 in 2014. Mm. And then in 2015, won the championship in GP2 by 108 points.
Jesus Christ.
Alexander Rossi, the Indy 500 winner,
right,
was second.
Wow.
Also raced Super Formula in 2016 and took over for Alonso for one race in 2016 after Alonso had a nasty crash in Australia.
Yeah.
And then Vandoorne came in 10th place in the race he subbed for. So it was cool to win, to get a point.
God, that's incredible. Was that 2 years ago then, that crash?
2016, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Because it's the first race of the season. It's what's on this weekend.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. His first year last year, he scored 16th. He finished 16th in the points championship, one place behind Alonso.
Right. In a bad car in his first year in F1, really. So, like, you know, he's done all right.
Not
he's
the bottom.
No.
Speaking of the bottom, our last team here, Sauber. It's a red and white car this year. I think, personally, my favorite paint job.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
I have to have a look at it actually. Alfa Romeo.
Yes, they've partnered with Alfa Romeo.
Yeah.
They use Ferrari engines. Sauber is a Swiss company.
Yeah.
And they have a new team principal this year.
Oh really?
Yes. Frédéric Vasseur.
Okay.
The first thing he did when he came into office, I guess, he saw that the team was planning on using Honda engines next year, and he said, we're not doing that.
Really?
We're using Ferrari engines.
Oh, that's amazing.
The first thing he did. And they're the ones with the female development driver, Tatiana Calderon.
Okay.
Who is Colombian.
Right. Oh, okay.
So we could have a South American driver.
Right. Castro Maldonado, eat your heart out.
Right. Could potentially see a woman start in F1 races.
That'd be cool.
But their drivers are Marcus Ericsson, a Swede, who, despite scoring 0 points to his teammates' 5 points last year, Ericsson is still around and his teammate is not.
Right, yeah. What the... yeah.
He's a paid driver.
Yeah. Oh, I do like the Alfa Romeo pay job.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Sauber, sorry.
He has won a few races in GP2 and won... He won the championship in the All Japan Formula 3 championship,
but does not sound
All Japan to
me. No, it doesn't. It doesn't sound very Japan at all, like, actually.
He started racing in F1 in 2014 for Caterham.
Yes.
We all know how that turned out, because they are not here anymore.
No, they were selling parts on eBay or something at one stage.
I bought a shirt.
This year, right? Yeah. You could buy like a nut for $200 or something. Right. And he is the primary driver.
Yep.
Because the other driver is like...
He's a rookie.
Yeah.
Charles Leclerc. Spelled Charles Leclerc.
Yes.
But pronounced Charles Leclerc.
And he is from Monaco, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is Monegasque.
Is that what they say?
Which is how you say that.
Monegasque.
Which is fun.
Oh my God.
He's also a rookie. He absolutely wiped the floor in Formula 2.
Oh, really?
Last year. Yeah. Just... really incredible driver. He won the championship. It was his rookie season.
Right.
Which is something only Lewis Hamilton, Nico Rosberg, and Nico Hülkenberg have ever done in Formula 2.
Interesting. That's cool. It's going to be fun to see him in this car then.
The prior year, he won the GP3 championship also as a rookie.
Right.
Yeah. So during those 2 years, he was also part of Ferrari's Driver Academy doing tests for Ferrari, Haas, and Sauber. a childhood friend of Jules Bianchi.
Right, yeah.
Who,
I guess,
unfortunately has the distinction of being the most recent driver to have died because of an incident in Formula One.
Yes, the only one for 20 odd years, I guess. Yeah. Which has brought in a bunch of security measures, one of which is new to this year's season.
Yes, we will be discussing that soon. Yeah. Also, his father raced in Formula 3 in the 80s and 90s and died last year right before a race, which Leclerc went on to win.
Jesus
So, yeah,
Christ.
I'm rooting for this guy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. When we started, I was like, oh, he's from Monaco, Silver Spoon, you know, rich tax
haven boy. He's actually
awesome. But that's pretty cool.
I hope he shines as much as one can in the Sauber.
Right, that's the thing. And I hope he enjoys his one season at Sauber if he does well. Because then everyone else will be all over him. Interesting, though. Number two driver against Ericsson.
Yeah, I mean, Ericsson's been there.
Yeah,
so
makes sense.
He's got seniority. Yeah.
Leclerc is 20, I think, this
year?
He's
20.
Yeah.
All right, and that's drivers and teams.
Yeah.
Hope you can remember all that.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck.
Again, all you need to do is say, like, oh, who's that one guy? And then, okay, I remember him. He's the quirky Finn or whatever.
The different countries help.
Yes.
And because it's like, oh, you're that one. You can at least like project some things you think about those places onto those people and like form a model for who that person is.
Yeah. People will like, you'll watch them make a cool racing move and go like, all right, I want to remember that guy. Like, that's how I became a Bottas fan.
Right.
I saw him do some awesome moves. I'm like, all right, I like that dude.
Yeah.
But let's get into the new rules and regulations for Formula One 2018.
Yeah, new rules, baby. You know what's fucking cool?
What?
Rules. You know what rules?
What? Well, check this.
You got to regulate.
Regulate.
Make dog in a G child, man. We're here to regulate.
those T wings and shark fins from last year.
Okay.
They're gone.
Out the door?
They're out.
Okay.
Yep. If you don't know what those are, don't worry. They're gone.
Don't worry about it. They sound what they sound like.
Yep.
Yeah,
but as you alluded to, the Halo cockpit protection device.
Yes.
Is now on these cars and mandatory and.
It's weird.
It's weird.
It's a big plastic thing that's right in front of a driver's face.
Yep.
That stops them from getting hit by mostly tires or if they protects them if they crash into something like I guess Jules did where he hit a vehicle and their heads are exposed, right? So it's supposed to protect them. I almost don't know how it would protect them because it's so thin at the front.
But it's supposedly the strongest part of the Formula One cars.
Right. Yeah. But it's so strange because essentially it's a halo. Imagine a halo going around your head, except that the halo's connected at the front.
Yeah, it's got a big post right in the middle of it.
So right in the front where they're looking, there is like something there. But I think it's supposed to work somewhat like the way we don't recognize our noses. Like our brain removes our nose from our field of vision in the same way that like the drivers are looking so far past their focal point is like quite far ahead of them because they're going so fast that they don't necessarily see that thing. Like it doesn't really get in the way.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. That seems crazy to me.
Yeah. This is the first season with them, so we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
I find it awesome that McLaren secured a sponsorship for their Halo from a sandal company.
Yeah. Because it looks exactly like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Or tongs, I guess they call them down in
Dan Ende.
Yeah. Tongs. Yeah. Melbourne. Tongs.
Yep.
That's what
flip flops.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tinnies.
also in the technical side, suspension systems that could alter the car's aero performance over a lap are not allowed.
Oh.
So apparently Red Bull and Ferrari had mechanical devices on their suspensions that allowed the ride height of the car to change with the steering angle.
Right. Okay. I mean, this sounds very much like the problems we had back in the 90s as well of like the any like mechanical stuff that's like corner based in that way.
Yeah.
Like you're allowed to change the div and like lots of things in the car, but they get a little bit weird when there's automated systems doing a lot of this stuff.
Right, and this wasn't computer controlled or anything. It was all a mechanical device.
Oh, so okay, so it was just like doing
But this is the kind of stuff, as much as like I don't really understand what's happening here, I like this stuff because it's loopholes, right? It's
right, yeah,
it's
totally.
Thinking outside the box and
yeah,
doing things not to the letter of the law, but
this happens every time. The rear diffuser, like this type of stuff, just like
weird innovations,
that end up making a big difference. And sometimes they roll them so everyone can use them, and then sometimes they're like, nah, you can't use that.
Yeah, there's another thing that goes on that I'm still not really clear on called oil burning, where I think they put I think they put oil in their fuel to make it
two-stroke it
explode better.
Okay.
I don't know. Apparently it's hard to detect, but they're as much as the stewards can crack down on that. Right. They are. I don't know.
I got a leaf blower when I moved out east. That's got a two-stroke engine.
Nice.
And it was the first time I ever had to do that whole oil in the fuel thing. And man, I fucked it up so bad the first time. It was just smoke coming out of that shit. It was just burning all that oil off. I was like, oh, this is the worst.
Nice.
Yeah, bad news.
Drivers are now allowed 3 rather than 4 power units this season.
Jesus.
So
a lot of people came close last year.
You have only 3 engines to last you the entire season. So if it explodes, that's one gone. And right. You got 21 races to
do. Good luck, Toro Rosso.
So this is basically, yeah, with your Honda, it's basically forcing engine manufacturers to lessen or to design their engines to be as reliable as possible.
That's good.
Rather than maximize outright power, because right. That means more potential for explosions.
Which is not the way they make F1 cars. Like, everything about the F1 cars are disposable. The tires fucking fall apart.
Yeah.
The like parts of the cars pop off all the time when they stick them back on chassis. So it's kind of like F1 like stuff is designed in a way that's like, get us through this weekend.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've been pushing. This has been like a slow thing. Like, they've been regulating the amount of power units like every year.
It's been less and less.
Yeah. Eventually it's going to just be like one for the year. And it doesn't mean like if you blow them all that you don't get to race anymore. You just like incur a penalty basically if you do. So
yeah. Fewer blown engines means less money needs to be spent on replacements. So this is supposed to help the smaller teams, right? Yeah. That don't have bottomless pockets. Speaking of penalties, we've got simplified, I'm going to put this in quotes, simplified grid penalties for power unit changes.
Cool.
So I'm just going to quote F1 on this one. Under the previous system, drivers changing multiple power unit elements could rack up multiple grid drops, often in excess of the number of cars at the event.
Yes.
Like, we used to see McLaren get like 75 grid spot penalty.
So would they just be at the back?
Yeah. Right.
And the rest of them would not knock on to the next race or anything like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, any driver who earns a grid penalty of 15 places or more will have to start from the back of the grid. If more than one driver receives such a penalty, they will be arranged at the back of the grid in the order in which they changed elements.
Oh, so the last one will presumably be further back? The most recent change of the engine?
Yeah,
I guess. That's weird.
And then they say that should mean less headaches for fans and for those at the FIA tasked with deciding the grid. I'm not sure how this is different.
I guess it stops them having to make last minute because I assume that means that like if you're going to do anything with your engine, you're going to tell them early because you don't want to be last.
Okay.
So maybe it's to stop that type of thing and like starting people from the pit lanes or something, or at least to like have. That's funny. That's like a whole. When they say what order the drivers are in and then some shit goes down or they're like trying to fix it and then they don't and they have to hurry them to the back. Like, it sounds like a last minute logistical problem.
You know what? It'll also. Yeah. So like if McLaren, say McLaren last year, like they had to replace their entire power, not just the engine, but like their entire power unit and incurred penalties for each part. Right.
Right.
And that put them 75 back.
Yeah.
But then like in the third qualifying session, someone crashes and they have to replace the gearbox. That'll also incur a penalty.
Right.
Right. So that would put them at the back, not McLaren.
Yeah.
Because it's the most recent.
Yeah.
So that would actually put McLaren a little further up. So
this may
result in more scrambling.
Yeah. I'm not sure which is fairer.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
And tires. Which we mentioned before.
Oh boy.
There are now 7 compounds.
Oh boy.
And they're all color coded.
Yes, that's true. So like that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. And there, you will only have to remember 3 of them for each race.
Yeah.
But Pirelli, which is the sole tire supplier for Formula One. It's not like other series where you get to pick your tire manufacturer.
Yeah.
It's just one.
They did that for a while. And the US Grand Prix that year won't do good when that happened. So yeah, they just do one now.
So we've got the Hypersoft.
Jesus Christ. Start with the worst one.
Which is brand new.
Hypersoft.
It's a new one for this year.
It's made of we used to call it Mola. Like when you're a baby, you'd make like things out of it. It's just like squidgy.
Oh, Play-Doh?
Yeah, yeah, Play-Doh. It's made of Play-Doh, these wheels.
They are pink in color. Well, they have a pink band.
That's interesting because that means they can't do the breast cancer thing then. Didn't they change one of them to pink every race?
Oh, yeah.
The super softs, I think the purples went pink. I thought. So I guess they don't do that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Or they do, and it confuses
everyone.
The first race that we'll see the Hypersofts is Monaco.
Okay, right, right.
Which makes a lot of sense, because there's not a lot of getting up to speed there. A lot of corners you want real grippy. Then we've got the Ultra Soft, which is purple.
Yep.
The Super Soft, which is red.
Okay.
So these are even different from what they were last year.
Right. The purple used to be that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Soft is yellow.
Okay.
Medium is white.
Right. Okay.
Hard is blue.
Okay, like dark blue.
And super hard is orange.
Okay.
That one's also new.
Why couldn't they have done like a hue scale? Like gone red to blue, like across the whole thing.
I don't know.
It seems a bit redundant. Yep. Orange is at one end and red's at the other, like
pink, yeah.
And pink at the bottom, yeah.
And red's in the middle.
maybe we think about that because we're like video people and we know that, like, and from working in Photoshop, that's to me is like cold to hot, right? Like that's, so maybe it doesn't read for other people that way, but yeah, funny.
Also races that, and this is a real technicality, but races that have been red flagged can now use standing restarts.
Yes.
Rather than having to start behind the safety car.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. I like standing starts a lot better.
Standing starts are a lot more exciting and more variability can happen.
Yep.
Generally when they go behind a safety car and they start again, everyone's like at speed and then there's some overtaking, but not that much.
Yeah,
standing starts are way cooler.
This is in addition to a rule that was introduced last year but never actually used, that said that races that start under the safety car, which is usually happens because of rain, can also use a standing restart once the track is dry enough.
That's mental.
Yeah.
They never used it, yeah, but it basically means we'll use the cars to clean the track and then we'll start the race.
Yeah.
But we'll use those laps. Those laps count.
Those laps count, yeah.
It's so funny.
Even though no one can pass.
So the rule this year is that they can do standing starts.
Yes.
So it's going to be interesting to see when they do and why, and why they don't. Like, to be honest, the wet stuff seems to be the time when they wouldn't, because standing starts in the rain is the most dangerous part, because braking is the problem. And when the whole pack is braking into the first couple of turns, anything can fucking happen. And what they try and do is have it so that if they're starting after some red flags or because of a safety car, that they don't immediately have a crash, which then leads to more of that. And it just it like never ends. Right. So it'll be interesting to see when they do. Like, you'd hope that every time there's a crash and there's a safety car or a red, if it's like really bad, that then it should be standard to do a standing start again.
Yeah.
Like, there's like no reason to start behind the safety car again when you do that stuff. Like, I hope that's the case anyway.
Yeah. It'll all be up to race director Charlie Whiting.
Right. And it'll be interesting to
hear his name a lot too.
If they bring them into the pit. So if a red flag happens, they generally bring them into the pit, which means that everyone can work on the car. And then it starts again from the safety car. And then they sort of, safety car comes in, the race is away. It'll be interesting to see if, like, maybe if there's a crash and they know they're going to do a standing start, if they just line them back up on the grid and then they can't work on the cars anymore, or whether or not they bring them into the pit, they can work on the cars. Safety car brings them around for one lap and then they do the grid. Like, it'll be funny how that all gets pieced together.
Yeah. Yeah. There was some concern, I think, about the standing starts from a tire temperature perspective.
Right.
But then I think Charlie Whiting said, first of all, no one has come and talk to me about that.
Right.
And second, they're going to be in the pits anyway for a red flag.
Right.
They're going to put warm tires on.
They're going to put warm tires on and they might put on softer tires.
Yeah.
Imagine if there was like a standing start with 10 laps left. Everyone goes on to ultra softs and then it's like bonkers for the last time. You know, that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We are also getting a French Grand Prix this season.
Yes, it's back.
Which is new.
It's not Manicourt, but it's another.
Yeah, the last one was in 2008.
Right.
At Manicourt.
Yeah.
This one will be at Circuit Paul Ricard.
What did they use it for? Was it preseason testing?
They used it for testing.
Yeah.
But its last F1 race was in 1990.
Yeah.
After which it switched to Magny-Cours.
The French Grand Prix was an interesting one because it ran for many, many years. And then when they did the European Grand Prix thing and it bounced between like them and Spa and a couple of other ones. Actually, I'm not sure if Spa was the one. It might have been one of the German ones. So they had the French Grand Prix was like, certainly when I was as a child watching my sister, the French Grand Prix was like one of the major normal Grand Prix. Like, it was like Monza or anything else. But yeah, it's been out of the like many of those circuits, like just had trouble getting people to go to it for a while, especially in that packed European calendar. I mean, like Spa has problems, and the both German tracks have problems in a country where everyone loves F1.
Yeah.
Monza has problems, you know, so it's great that it's back. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Makes that European chunk of the Grand Prix season even bigger. And we're not getting, it's not replacing anything. This is 21.
It's one more. Yeah.
So it's cool.
Into news or other and or other big stuff that happened in the off season. The main one being F1 TV, Danny.
Oh my God.
Finally.
I'm sorry to everyone in the UK right away. Because it's not available.
Right. There. So this is the,
obviously kind of
the cable cutter version of Formula One.
Yes.
As an American, we had to get to watch F1 legally. We had to get the NBC Sports Network channel in our cable package.
Right.
Which is stupid expensive.
Or through like PlayStation View.
Yeah, I had to use PlayStation View. Yeah. We couldn't just like MotoGP has been doing this for years. MLB TV, like all these other sports have these like apps that you just pay one subscription fee and you can watch everything.
Even even football does.
Yeah.
Like it's replay service, a lot of it, but like it's still there, right? It's something.
Right. F1 didn't.
Yeah.
Because it was run by an old man.
Right. And TV licenses were such an important part of it because it's a weird international sport where people watch it everywhere and it's broadcast from everywhere. And I think he was just terrified of internet.
Right.
Yeah.
But regardless, Waluigi, we have it now. It has not launched yet. I think the rumor was that it was going to launch this week ahead of Australia.
Hasn't yet.
Not to my knowledge.
No.
We could check right now, but I don't think so.
But you can tell their production staff is different. Like the YouTube channel is very different. The stuff that's going
up there.
Yeah. It looks more like what happened with Formula E a couple of years ago when they had people making original content that was like packaged for clearly like people going to send it around.
And they'll be doing that as well. They have a presenter, Will Buxton.
Oh, really?
Who was the track guy for NBC Sports Network and did a great job. So kudos to him.
Do you know what the commentary is going to be? I was hearing it was Sky.
I think it's Sky.
Which is why it's not available in the UK, because it would be ridiculous.
Right, because then you would just pay for F1 TV and not pay for Sky, because Sky is a paid service in the UK.
And Sky Sports is like a cable package, but they literally have a Formula One channel.
Yeah.
They have a Sky Sports F1 channel.
So this will cost $12 a month or $100 a year.
Okay. That seems fine.
They will have the world feed in English, French, German, and Spanish, and all 20 onboard cameras.
Wow.
Yeah.
Any resolution stuff?
I guess
they're not doing 4K and madness or anything like that. Are they?
Maybe. They're rolling out the desktop app first,
cool.
And then mobile, and then set-top boxes.
Cool.
Or connected TV devices.
Right.
Launching in 40 countries. There's also a lower tier called F1 TV Access, which is $3 a month or $20 a year, cool. Which only gets you replays, not live.
That's cool that they offer that. A lot of people prefer watching this stuff in replays.
Yeah.
Like for $3 a month, that will basically like F1 fans who like have to download torrents of all their races after the fact.
Yeah.
They will, for $3 a month, they'll do that.
Yeah.
Like
if you make it easy.
Yeah. Make it easy. You'll totally undercut. Yeah.
According to racefans.net, though, Sky has slashed their prices.
Oh, really?
In response to this. So
we should also mention racefans.net is not a new website.
You're right. It is the old F1 Fanatic.
They have rebranded.
Yeah. It is £150 for 9 months, allowing fans to watch all 21 races on the 2018 F1 calendar. It was previously available for £305 for the same period. So it's basically they halved it.
They halved it. And I bet they're getting a lot of money from F1 for using their feed.
Yes.
So I'm not worried about the F1 channel necessarily. You know what I mean? Yeah. And also the F1 channel has a lot of like very good original stuff, like their packages around the races and a lot of the stuff that they show. Like they do like lots of like profiles and retrospectives and mini docs and all that sort of stuff. So like I hope, like if I was living in the UK and I had cable, I would still get the F1 TV channel. I think it's worth it.
Also, if you're living in the US, more good news. If you have ESPN, you don't even have to pay for this F1 TV thing.
Yeah.
Because all the races now, instead of NBC Sports Network, will be on either ESPN, ESPN2, or ABC.
Do we know if they're going to have ad breaks?
I bet they are.
Yeah. It depends how much you can stomach the ad breaks then if you get F1 TV, I guess.
Yes. According to the statement, practice and qualifying sessions will air, quote, live and in replay.
Okay.
So I don't know if they're getting... practice and qualifying will be live necessarily.
Case by case.
Like,
because practice, you can, you know, I don't even watch practice live anymore. I just watch F1 does really good like wrap up videos of the practice sessions a lot of the time.
Yeah, yeah. Right on YouTube.
Yeah,
and so. The races. So if you don't feel like watching 2 hours, just right. watch the highlights.
Yeah,
that's not for me, but
yeah.
they're there. Other news: Grid Girls replaced yes. with Grid Kids,
which is what Formula E was doing for a bit as well. They had, they're not just random kids either. They're like racing kids.
Oh, really?
They're like kids from like local academies and stuff okay. like that. I believe that's what they're doing as well. But that's what a Formula E did.
Okay.
Yeah.
The racing, don't they do this in soccer too? Like they have yeah, kids out there. I guess they and do. Meet the players.
Yeah.
And
for European sports, like I'm not sure if they do for. I guess for Premier League games, they usually have when they like exchange flags or whatever. I guess that's a European thing as well. Yeah, you'll have like boys and girls who are playing, who are like from local teams again, will get brought in to like wear the thing and go with the captain of the team to like exchange the flag and do stuff like yeah. that. Yeah, it's cool. They did. We won't. That means we won't get the Monaco Grid boys anymore. The hunky,
too bad.
The hunky men with their polo neck shirts or whatever. Those popped collars. They were cool.
And who will stand in our hallways and clap awkwardly?
Yeah, right. I that might be my least favorite of all of the stuff.
Like sexism aside,
right?
It made me feel dumb.
Yeah,
it made me feel like F1 thought I was an ape.
Yeah,
like, totally. Look, yeah. Pretty girls, huh?
Yeah, right. It felt like
it made me feel stupid.
I never. It's like the booth babe stuff. It's like at yeah. When you know, video game events, they have, you know, models showing stuff off, and it's like it's of a bygone era. Like,
yes.
I hated it anyway. Like, my feminist leanings would have. I wasn't a fan of it regardless. But outside of that, it just didn't fit anymore anyway.
It felt antiquated.
Totally. Like so it was. There was a little bit of a kick up about it on the internet about a month ago when this happened, which I think was largely just from like angry white ring people. I don't think it was actually anything to do. Like F1 fans, I think, are like fucking whatever.
Yeah.
You never see them anyway. Like, it's not like at the event. It's like it's more of a thing, but like. The only time you'd see them was during like everyone's on the grid. Like there was too many people. It wasn't yeah. like you're even like gawking at all these grid girls.
MotoGP though, they're front and center.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a while since I didn't watch much MotoGP last year at all.
Apparently this first race was a banger.
Oh really?
Yeah. So was the first
it just started
race
last week, didn't it?
Yeah, last week.
I got an email from their thing going like, "Yo, resubscribe your MotoGP TV thing. You didn't last year."
Yeah.
So yeah, I might do actually.
The first race of the IndyCar season was also very good.
Cool.
Yeah. Which I think is now up on their YouTube channel for free.
Cool.
If you want to watch
good.
It.
Good. Yeah.
Good race.
Check it out. But yeah, no more grid girls.
Official statement from Formula One: while the practice of employing grid girls has been a staple of Formula One. For decades, we feel this custom does not resonate with our brand values, and it's clearly at odds with modern day societal norms. We don't believe the practice is appropriate or relevant to Formula One and its fans, old and new, across the world.
Yep, I agree. Both of those words. I don't think it's appropriate, and even if it was, it's certainly not relevant.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm like, and the other thing is, like, some people were saying, like, oh, that means a bunch of models are going to lose a bit of work during the year. There is so much, like work, contract work at F1 events that is not doing that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? That like loads of people still get employed for like doing anything from the hospitality services and to like all that sort of stuff.
When it seems like Liberty Media, the people who own Formula One, is right. trying to expand out race day at the track.
Totally. They're right? investing way more in that sort yeah. of stuff. So the hope would be that those folks will still, I mean, it's only one weekend of the year for a lot of them, right? But like, you'd hope that they'll still get something out of it, especially because a lot of them are race fans as well, apparently.
They're also investing in theme music for Formula One.
Fucking,
we have a new theme song.
Is EJ coming over? Or?
No. This theme song was written by a guy who has done a lot of Fast and the Furious movies.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm not going to play it here, but I'll link it on F1.cool. It sounds like if ESPN were broadcasting Unreal Tournament.
Oh my, what?
Yeah.
I mean, it is a drum and bass.
No, I mean like that, like Unreal Tournament 2003, like triumphant.
Okay.
Olympic,
oh yeah, yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there horns in there?
Yeah.
A bit? Or, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I can imagine what that. Yeah.
Yes.
That's great. Did you see the video about how they shot that trailer for
yes.
the Formula One logo?
Yeah.
They actually fucking.
I didn't know it was a practical effect.
I did not realize that either. It's amazing.
It's on the Shift F1 Twitter.
Right.
At Shift F1 podcast.
Yeah. It's something else. I couldn't believe that. I love that logo.
Yeah.
I love
me too.
The treatment.
The more I see it, the better yeah. I like it.
Wipe out, baby.
Like, look at that old logo now. It's like, just like a college student with a pirated copy of Photoshop? Make
yeah,
that? What
oh,
is
I
that?
Get it. There's the one.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
In other news, barely news, Vettel is trying the undercut, ladies and gentlemen. And by that, I mean
his hair.
His hair.
Oh, yeah. Oh, oh, no. A little bit higher, darling. I don't know about that. He's done it like halfway up his sideburns.
It's like he couldn't quite commit to it.
Yeah. Or like he had to have a meeting halfway through. That's weird. Yeah, I don't know. Not a big fan.
Are Danny?
Yeah.
Pastor Maldonado.
Okay, go on.
One of our favorite drivers.
Our favorite Venezuelan F1 driver.
Yeah.
Our only, I mean, there's probably another famous one I can't think of, but the only one that matters in my heart.
Yeah. You certainly has not crashed as much as Pastor Maldonado. No. And earned a reputation for being a crazy oddball.
Yeah. Or done as many sit-ups in his hotel room.
That's right. Looks are everything. He is driving again.
Okay.
In the World Endurance Championship.
Oh, really?
Yes. See if you can go 6 hours without crashing.
Oh, my God. Yeah, everyone else now has to endure being on the track with him.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I think this means he has teammates, too. Like, he has to swap in and out of cars. So that's complicated.
Oh, God. Could you imagine if Ricardo or if Weber was on his team?
He'll be driving an LMP2 car.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
There you go.
Good to see. With, I thought you were going to say.
Dragon Speed.
That's the name.
That's the team.
Dragon Speed. Yep. Dragging everyone else behind them. I mean, just that's cool. For a second, I was worried you were going to say like he was like doing Uber or something.
He's driving.
Times are tough in Venezuela. Actually, times are tough in Venezuela at the moment. That's cool for him. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
I'll maybe tune in and see. Has Pastor Maldonado crashed yet? .com is almost assuredly back in business now, at least. So I'm good. Good news for them.
So that's a reason to watch World Endurance Championship. Yeah. A reason to watch Super GT is Jenson Button.
Really?
Yeah. He's doing, I think, the full season.
That's a surprise, because the reason he stopped was because he was sick of traveling and wanted to relax a bit, apparently.
Well, he only gets to only has to travel to Japan now.
Right. That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, cool.
Also in Super GT is a guy named Jan Maddenbro or something.
Did you make this person up?
No, he's
sounds
real.
Like John Madden with like Marlboro. Jan Maddenbro? Oh my gosh. I can't wait to play Jan Maddenbro's football.
Here's
like,
a guy racing in Super GT.
Yeah, smoking a cigarette.
He's also racing in Super GT and came from I forget what it's called, but like the Sony PlayStation Gran Turismo Academy.
Oh, that's cool.
So he did well enough at Gran Turismo to earn a real drive seat.
That's amazing.
And now he's racing in Super GT with Jenson
Super
Button.
GT? Yeah. With Jenson Button? Wait, is he not on the same team?
No, not on the same team.
That's cool.
But Super GT is great. We did go back and listen to the Alt F1 Super GT Primer.
Right.
It's fantastic. There is a car with Hatsune Miku on it. There's a man with an orange jacket. It's great.
Yeah.
And it's you can watch it for free with English commentary on YouTube.
Yeah.
Nismo TV is the channel.
Awesome.
Yep. But let's not talk about other stuff, Daniel. Let's talk about this stuff. Australia. Take us through the course real quick. This is getting to be a long
podcast. Are we even going through like all the different races they're on this year?
No.
Okay. Let me quickly do it. How about that?
Okay.
I'll rush through them all like a crazy son of a bitch. Australia is the first one up. Then we're in Bahrain. Then China. Azerbaijan, which is the Baku Street Circuit. This will be our third year there.
Yes.
I want to say. Yeah. It's got a castle in it. Real weird. Then a Spanish Grand Prix in Catalonia. Monaco, probably the staple of our Formula One, the big one.
Yeah.
Canada then. They're doing Canada and then France, which is nice.
Sure.
You know, Montreal is basically French Canada, so fair enough. And then Austrian, we're into sort of Europe then, so it's Austrian Grand Prix in Spa. British Grand Prix in Silverstone, we've still got one. Back to Germany for the Hockenheim Ring, Hungarian Grand Prix in the Hungaroring, Belgium, Italy. Then we go off again and around the world, Singapore, Marina Bay, which is the night one, the Russian Grand Prix in Sochi, Japan, the United States Grand Prix in Austin, Texas, then the Mexican Grand Prix in Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez, and then Autodromo Pache, you're right, Pache, which we sort of call Interlagos, which is in Brazil, which is the penultimate one, and then we all finish it off at the Yas Marina Circuit in Abu Dhabi for the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, number 21.
Yeah.
That'll be the 25th of November, so Thanksgiving dinner and then some and some
race cars,
but we're in Austria at the Melbourne Grand Prix. A popular circuit, Albert Park. It goes around a lake. Some of it is actual roads you can go on during the rest of the year. Some of it, the big part with the stadium, presumably, is the part that they only use during the race. It's a fun little circuit. I think it's a fun one to start off on because a lot of the circuits are just like in, we talk about this a lot, they're like stadium circuits, yeah. And it's kind of hard to tell where is what, but because this is basically on a lake in a park in the middle of a city, the sight lines are very unique and stuff like that. There's basically sort of like one main straight and then sort of two or three medium ones that sort of half of them half bend, because like a lot of it's not really F1 or isn't racetrack mm-hmm. a lot of the year. It's a 16 turner, it's a clockwise. I'd say the flash points to really take into account are the main straight has like a right hander which then turns left and goes into another straight, and you tend to get overtaking on both ends of those straights. So essentially, okay. What's turn one and two and turn three, which is where Alonso had his bad crash down the bottom.
I think both of those are DRS zones as
yes,
well.
I believe so.
And they just added a third one.
Oh, down at Ascaria or in the back?
On the one that has a kink in it, yeah, between turn 12 and 13.
13, yeah, okay. So that's the other fastest part of the track because you're coming out of turn 10 hitting the gas, and then they only lift off between 11 and 12.
Yeah.
You break maybe a little bit, and there's like a crazy wide runoff on the inside of 12, but you retain so much pace. The straight, that third DRS straight, isn't very long, but you're taking so much speed into it that they basically reach like top revs by the time they hit third 13. So that's cool. There's lots of space to overtake. Turn 9 and 10 as well, at the Clark turn, there's a chance to jump in front of people there. It's a fun one. There's usually a safety car, I feel like, here, or there's usually some crashes, or there's a lot of like runoff with gravel where cars get stuck as well when they go out. So, and they have to go get them, stuff like that. It's a fun one.
Yeah.
Like this one, right in the middle of town. Apparently all the folks all over Shift F1 friends who live in the area say you can just hear the fuckers all week. Just so that's pretty cool.
We got soft, super soft, and ultra soft.
soft.
Good stuff. For this race.
That's so silly that they're all softs.
Yes.
It's just absurd.
Each driver gets to pick how many of each tire that they take.
Yes.
They're required to take at least one of each. Mm-hmm.
And this is the last for everything. Practice, qualifying, which is when you need to go kind of your fastest. Yep. Put the least amount of fuel in the car. They put the best tires on and they're allowed to use DRS whenever the fuck they want. So that's when they go like as fast as they possibly can.
Yep.
And then you need the sort of other tires to last you through the race, basically.
Yeah, so basically that results in having a ton of the softest one.
Yes.
So everyone took a ton of ultra soft tires, then like two or three super softs, and then one or two softs.
Right.
Weather.
Okay.
Always a big factor.
Yes.
In qualifying and the race. For qualifying, it looks to be about 70 degrees or 21 if you're nasty.
Right. If you're nasty?
Yeah. Or you read Celsius. 16 or 26 kilometers per hour winds.
Right.
So fairly high.
Yeah.
And on qualifying day, a 90% chance of precipitation.
Really, yeah. It's that time. Yeah. We're coming into, I guess, we're entering fall, I guess, like autumn. For them, southern hemisphere,
yep.
Right? Leaving winter. So, yeah, it's a high chance of rain down there.
Race day probably won't be rainy, though the track may be damp, but we will see slightly higher temps and slightly higher wind as well.
Okay.
So,
surprised about the wind. I didn't realize there was that much wind down there, it being in the middle of a city and all, but
that's what Google Weather say.
Yeah.
And TV times in the US of A.
Oh, boy.
These are Eastern times.
Yes.
We got free practice one. Here you go.
Tell me.
Free practice one. This is great because now I have a reason to give them in Eastern time.
Thank you.
Because I had to compute them all last time when we were both Pacific, whatever. Free practice one is 9 p.m. on Thursday.
Okay.
On ESPN 3. The Ocho. Wait. What I said about ESPN, ESPN 2, and ABC is apparently totally wrong.
Because it's on 3.
Free practice 2 is Friday at 1 a.m. on ESPN 3. Free practice 3 is Friday at 10 p.m. on ESPN News.
What? Fucking, they know where else to cram it.
Yeah.
Sure.
ESPN, you. I don't know.
Yeah, right.
All right. Qualifying is Saturday at 2 a.m. on ESPN2.
Okay, that's better.
And the race is Sunday at 1 a.m. on ESPN2.
Motherfucker. Yeah. Sunday, 1 a.m., so Saturday night.
So it's actually easier to watch for me. That's slightly. 10 p.m.
Yeah, because we're daylight
Pacific
savings.
Time.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kicked in. Hasn't in Europe yet. So it's all going to get very confusing again. If you ever want to find out the times for races, you just go to f1calendar.com.
Yeah.
And there's a drop down which
you choose your time zone.
Yeah. And it'll
and everything
do it
is
all.
There. Yeah. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Super handy.
You can send us messages.
You can. People have been mostly like, you guys coming back? So I didn't answer any of them, but here we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
F1.cool/emails.
Yes.
And there's a form there you can fill out.
I need to fix that email. Okay. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do it. Okay. I'm going to say, pinky promise.
Pinky. We're done.
I'm going to fix that email address proper by the time we do the next one.
Fantastic. Yeah. We're also on Twitter. Follow at Shift F1 Podcast for show updates and any fun F1 stuff we come across. Yeah. I am at Drew Scanlon.
I'm at Danny O'Dwyer.
As always, you can find our show notes on F1.cool and along with how to subscribe via RSS, Google Play, iTunes, wherever podcasts, however you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
Until next time, I am Drew Scanlon. That's Danny O'Dwyer. If you want to support us, we are both on Patreon.
Yes.
We do our, that's how we get our monies.
We make video game documentaries of various descriptions.
Yeah. It has nothing to do with Formula One.
No. Nope.
But if you want to support us, that's, that's how we get money. I am patreon.com/clothmap. Danny is patreon.com/noclip.
Yes, I changed it.
Nice.
Although I also got them to redirect the other one just in case. So nice. Danny O'Dwyer also goes to Noclip now.
Very good.
Yeah.
Got all those back issues of Shift F1.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We actually don't know what our schedule is going to be like for Shift F1 this year.
We're mixing it up a bit.
Yeah.
We're going to change the format a little bit. It might be, we're still trying to talking about how it might involve less detailed post shows.
Yeah.
It might involve more talking about the news around it. And we have some new ideas to like freshen it up this year.
Yeah. Basically, the hard part is scheduling because we are both, we have both of our jobs are very erratic.
Yeah. And last year, I think like I probably more than you like dropped the ball in terms of like trying to be relatively consistent. So this year we're trying to do whatever we're doing. We're going to like keep it like that is the day we're recording this and we'll keep it consistent every week. And then that means that when we're planning projects, if we do weekly, maybe we'll do bi-weekly,
maybe monthly. We don't know yet.
Sure. Figure it out.
Yep. So until then, anything else, Danny?
No, I'm going to go outside and it was raining most of this podcast and now the sun's come out in San Francisco. So yeah, I should say the reason I'm actually in town is because Game Developers Conference is on. So GDC is on. We were showing one of our documentaries here and also just to get some sun. Because Maryland winter, man. Everyone said it on the podcast last year on email. They were like, it's going to be real fun. But one reason I really want to get you out as well is that I live really close to a go-kart track.
Oh.
And I've not done it yet. So I'm looking forward to that. And the other thing that happened is that for my birthday, my wife got me a track day.
Oh, man.
But it's up in New Jersey. So I'm driving up.
Where all racing happens.
To do, I forget what, it's a fucking Ferrari sports car I'm driving. It's like $250,000 it's worth or something. I'm doing like for like 30 minutes.
Don't pastor it.
I know, right? Could you imagine?
No.
So I feel bad. I forget exactly which Ferrari it is. But I'm doing that as well in a couple of months. So I'll record some of that probably and talk about it on the podcast as well. That'll be fun. But yeah, we need to get you out and do like a go-kart thing.
That'd be fun. Yeah. Well, Danny, the sun is out. A new dawn is rising on a season of Shift F1 and a season of Formula One.
The sun's not shining in my eyes because the halo is protecting me from the sun rays like a sunglasses that sits off my face.
Great.
Yeah.
Have a good race weekend, everyone. Cheers. We will see you next time.